China's working on its Made in China 2025 push.
The U.S. is playing with fire, but China has fire too.
Global economic powerhouse.
Young Chinese people are becoming disillusioned with everyday life.
China has mobile payment.
Cashless.
A cashless society.
All use QR codes.
China. China. People think I don't like China. I love China. What the?
大家好 ，Welcome back to another episode of China WTF. We have a very special guest on the show today. Hello, Vera.
Hi, how are you, Arnaud?
Thank you for coming down.
Of course.
So, for audiences that don't know you, and it's not many people, you have a large following on Instagram. Maybe just introduce yourself a little bit and tell our audience who you are and what you do.
Okay, so I went to New York probably seven years ago and went to school and I started my first WeChat online blog. At that time, it was like really new to the whole, the blogging world is like really new to Chinese audience. So I got lucky and I got nominated the first Chinese blogger in the U.S. and wow. Which completely changed my whole life because I thought I was gonna get a job, and then that became my job. And I was the first Chinese influencer in the U.S. Started to work with big brands, and after 2 years, I just decided to move it to the next level. So I started my PR company, which is called WG Empire. Started to build my little empire in New York and helping. Bridging Chinese market with the U.S. market, helping brands doing their marketing, sales, and PR in all kinds of directions. So I have clients, half my clients from China, half clients from the U.S. And then about a year ago, I started a online e-commerce store called Verified. So helping Chinese Asian designers to represent their products in the U.S. and sell their products in the U.S. Yeah.
Wow, it's amazing. It's a lot of things that you're doing.
Yeah, can't stop.
So are you like one of, I guess, would you say you were one of the first few or one of the first ones to start kind of as a Chinese influencer abroad, right?
Yeah, social media, I think so, yeah.
What was it like back then? Because we started Qumin, I remember, kind of like 7 years ago, and not many people were really focusing on China, like brand-wise. It wasn't as powerful in the global market as it was now. What was it like as an influencer back when it wasn't that?
It was weird because when I started it, and there was no blogger, this whole idea, and there was no blogger in China. But, because I write in Chinese, I write articles and take pictures and post on WeChat public account, and people still call you Wang Hong, which is different.
Yeah.
I don't know how to translate that.
Wang Hong is like an internet celebrity, sorry.
Okay, yeah. But like that's a whole different thing. Wang Hong and a blogger is like different to me. Because like I think blogger actually, they create more content and they're more creative.
You're more journalistic.
Yeah,
and
they're more influential actually, instead of just posting
lifestyle stuff.
Pictures of your face. So, like tons of selfies. So I think at that time, like people still call you Wang Hong and they don't even know like if that's a job, if that can make you,
sure.
That could be a career. So they just think, oh, you're just taking pictures and, posting things online. But then I started that and, still writing blogs and share my thoughts and helping brands actually, do a lot of brand consulting. At that time, I didn't even know that was consulting.
So you're doing actual marketing,
helping
people with strategy and tactics.
It's like you're doing, advertisement for brands. They're like, oh yeah, we want to work with you. We want you to post, something for, say, this bag. But then they just give you this bag. They don't know how you would introduce this bag. So you'd be like telling them, okay, so this is what Chinese market is like. This is what we want.
Sure.
And so you're actually giving them a lot of brand consulting, branding strategy. And and then they just take it for free. So
we get that a lot. But it takes time to educate brands, right? And that's the process, kind of like... I remember when we first started, we had to educate brands a lot. Thank you for that introduction. And I guess to kind of like start off the episode for our audience, one of the main things we want to discuss specifically this episode is Chinese people abroad. Kind of like how brands can target Chinese people abroad.
Amazing.
Why it's different. And obviously yourself being not only someone who's moved over from China to the US, but also like an influencer, a marketer, and now a brand owner, we're hoping that you could bring a lot of insights for our audience.
Oh yeah, totally, 100%. I'll share everything.
But you have awesome, to, for yeah. free.
For free, again, yeah.
Thank you very much. I guess this leads nicely on to kind of your following when you first started and now even. Do you find that a lot of your followers are Chinese people who are living abroad, who are kind of students or expats or Chinese people in China, or is it like a mixture of both?
For a start, I think it was like mostly Chinese people in New York, because my stories was mainly focused on like, it's called 大宝纽约日记, so it's like my New York diary. So yeah. So I think everybody who lives in New York at that time just share a lot of, things in common, and they understand my struggle, and then because they're experiencing the same thing, so they have like a lot to relate to. But then after a while, it got bigger and bigger, and then I think there's a mixture of the audience that people who are actually in China, they wanted to go abroad, and then they read my article and then be like, understand it a little bit more, because my things are very authentic, and because they don't want to just hear it from say like the TV advertisement or all this agency that, you know, help students go abroad, because those stories could be, you know, fake or exaggerated, so they can't actually learn the real stories from another Chinese student or international,
someone who's actually experienced it, right?
Yeah. So that actually creates more my, you know, influence base in China. Yeah. Mainland China.
That's a really good point, and thank you for pointing that out. So a lot of people, I guess Chinese people, before they come abroad, they want to kind of research and learn about the lifestyle and problems they might have. And
totally.
And I think that's a good way for brands to as well kind of like start to engage and communicate with Chinese people who are based in China before they come to China.
Yeah.
And yourself, obviously you're a Chinese influencer living abroad. How do you think this kind of like, I guess this kind of like industry, because there are obviously way more Chinese influencers in China for brands to tap into and leverage, but a lot of times we think at Qman that brands forget that there are a lot of Chinese audience outside of China, and there are influencers like yourself that they can work with to engage with this audience. How do you think this, do you think there are now more influencers for brands to work with because there are more Chinese abroad? And do you think it's a good way for Chinese brands to start engaging with the Chinese audience by working with influencers that are living abroad?
I think definitely there are much more Chinese influencer nowadays. They live abroad and in China as well, probably even like 100 times more live in China.
Of course,
Chinese influencers. And I definitely think that brands should start working with Chinese influencers. I mean, for me, that I realized since last year that, you know, at least like in New York, more and more bigger and bigger brands started to realize, oh, Chinese market is important now. And then they started to working with Chinese influencers, so they started to, you know, ask for my agency's help, and you know, because we're a very, you know, niche market with specific like a Chinese market, and which is good because like they are they can't like my agency compared to other like agencies in New York, we have this niche, and then they ask me for like, what's, you know, how do we use WeChat and how do we reach, you know, all these Chinese influencers, what do they like?
Do they work with you because of your audience base is made up of Chinese people abroad, so they kind of want to maybe test the water before they go into China full?
Normally they do that. Yeah. They do that first, and then after they, you know, get a sense of it, and also like, because I think that different same company, but like if they you know, if they have a Chinese team, so like the American team, they can't just, you know.
It's intimidating if they go straight to China.
Yeah.
So they can talk to someone like yourself who is based in the US, who's fluent in English, who has a Chinese audience abroad. Yeah. And I think that's kind of one of the key points we want to make on this podcast is that some brands already understand this, that they can communicate with Chinese audiences who are living abroad, almost to kind of like dip their toe in the water before they go full on in China, which can be very expensive and time consuming and a huge risk for some brands.
Yeah, totally.
There's literally hundreds and thousands of Chinese people living abroad in the UK, in the US, in Europe.
And it's getting more and more.
Exactly. It's getting more and more. And so we do this a lot of Qumin, right? We bring them in, whether they're students who are here for 3 months or people who have lived here for 5 years. We do a lot of consumer research here. So we ask people about their pain points, about their problems in relation to an industry or a brand. But more so, like, I guess the reason we talked to you today was because we realized that there's almost like a black hole of Chinese people who are living abroad that a lot of brands are forgetting to engage with. And we think one of the best ways is to work with influencers like yourself that are living abroad and have a voice over these Chinese people who are living abroad.
Yeah.
So what do you think, I guess the question is then, what do you think is the best way for brands to work with yourself in order to create something that resonates with Chinese people that live abroad specifically?
I think it depends. It really... it's like what kind of contents that you create and which platform to post those contents, right? So what kind of contents, like most of the brands, they work with you and then they don't really know what's going on nowadays with, you know, the Chinese millennials.
Yeah, exactly.
And so they're still using a very old fashioned idea, say like, you know, red envelopes and the dragons. Yeah. So which is...
don't get me started on London dragons.
So which is weird. They should do more research, but it's good that they started to ask you your opinion, like, which is cool, and, you know, you have more freedom to create your own content, and you can also educate them. And then, which platform to post? I think for Chinese people who live abroad, they use Instagram more, right?
Because
you can't use Instagram in China. So, yeah, then I would just prefer to post on Instagram and YouTube, and but like with Chinese content, which is good.
I think again a lot of people forget that because it's almost like ingrained in people's mind that Instagram is banned, Facebook bans, Twitter is banned, and all these Western platforms are banned. So people tend to forget to try and engage Chinese audience on these platforms. They forget that Chinese living abroad get a lot of their kind of social content from Instagram,
yeah, totally. I mean, I think Instagram and YouTube is really good because it's just you're a Chinese person live abroad, and then you can have all kinds of, you know, new ideas instead of just watching Chinese influencers. Like, because on Instagram you get to, you know, see everybody from all over the world. So I think it's a great platform.
It's like a different experience. Yeah, you're like showing people a different experience.
Rather than what everyone else is doing in
China. I guess kind of like content-wise, you touched briefly on content earlier. I want to talk a little bit about this. So we've seen some really good examples of how brands can communicate with the Chinese audience outside of kind of like overseas Chinese. And there's like two pillars, right? There's a cultural pillar and there's a language pillar. Like the cultural pillar, you need to understand, it always goes back to people and cultures. You need to understand, you were mentioning earlier, kind of millennial and Gen Zs, and what kind of content resonates with them, right? So you need to work that out. And for us, it's about still kind of like, still relating to Chinese cultural events or festivals, but because they're abroad and you're using Western platforms, an opportunity for you to almost push out those messages using English language on English platforms. So one example we saw was really good, was June Singles Day last year from MAC. They actually, on their English website, .co.uk website, they created a campaign for the an offer for Singles Day in English. We thought it was a really good idea, and they had a newsletter out as well, again, kind of like trying to tell people there's a Singles Day discount in English. Most of the people they send this out to wouldn't understand what Singles Day is, because they're like English people, right? No, some people will know, not everyone will. But I guess one is an opportunity for another sales event for to generate more sales, generate more awareness. But for me, it shows a level of respect to their Chinese audience that this brand really does understand Chinese culture, Chinese festivals. And not only that, we appreciate there are Chinese people abroad that, that we can push message to that relate to the cultural event, but in English. So I think it'll be nice to move on to the next topic, which we really want to kind of get your insight on, because not only have you experienced it, but you also talk a lot about it in your content, your editorial. What do you think are some of the biggest differences between Chinese people that are living in China and Chinese people that are living abroad?
Yeah, I definitely. I mean, that I took that as a big shock as well. Like, because I've been working on, you know, doing marketing between China and the U.S. and but like I just realized this since last year I started my own brand and I'm trying to do like, you know, the marketing. I mean, my main focus right now, my all my customers are Asian Chinese, mostly Chinese people. And so I was just thinking I'll using the same strategy, like, you know, in the US and also in China. But then it just like I have a team in China as well. And then every time, like, I get like really different results from, you know, the Chinese market rather than like than my market in the US. I was like, wow, like it's like same, it's they're all Chinese people, but they like different things and then they react to your campaign differently. And then I just realized there is a, I have to use two strategies.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have to use two strategies. And all this different social media platforms, you have to learn every single one to get an idea about how to use them, you know, the best way, how to really take advantage of different social media platforms. Say, like, we use Little Red Book, Weibo, and WeChat in China, right? We post contents on the, but, you know, we produce the same content at first, like me and my team in the US, yep. We produce this content and we like throw out these campaigns and like we really care about the brand stories. We really care about, you know, what's behind the brand and, you know, what makes us us and how we are different. And that's how I learned, like, you have to do that, like, you know, to start a brand in the US. That's what everybody cares. So we do all this, like, we focus heavily on, you know, doing the campaign, this brand story and, you know, like all the deep meanings and stuff. But then we do the same thing. We post on Xiaohongshu, Little Red Book, we post on Weibo. Like, I don't think people actually care that much. I just feel like I just throw like a lot of money.
We don't care about the brand story.
We just throw a lot of money and then we didn't get as much as, you know, we should. And
it's a great insight.
And then so I just like started to study the Chinese market because I just realized, oh my God, I am so detached now. Like, I haven't been back to China for that long. Luckily, I have team who they live there and they also, you know, they're in this industry. They're doing marketing PR in China, and one is in Shanghai, one's in Beijing. They kind of like give me all these feedbacks and what do they like and why do they like this. So I have to learn that, you know, on Xiaohongshu, maybe we use more Chinese influencers. That's just, they look really pretty.
It's more about the product rather than the brand story.
Yeah. And also say like, okay, in the US, you kind of want to focus that you are, you know, really trying to like, you know, boost up like every female's like confidence. Like, doesn't matter who you are, doesn't matter what you look like, you know, your plus size or your petite or, you know, different skin colors, no matter what, you can, you know, look gray in this, and you kind of want to do that. I focus really on, you know, like to be politically correct all the time. But like in China, we tried all different kinds of like cool girls. Like, I'm trying to, you know, think of the same strategy as I use in New York. Like, you know, I use different kind of bloggers, but then the result always come back with like, you know, I don't know if I can say this. Just like,
say
okay,
it.
Yeah, okay. Just fuck like, it. All right. Just like the results are always like the only like standard, like pretty girls give us like the better results. So, which is kind of disappointing to me. But I get it. I get it. I mean, when I was in China, there's like, it's just pretty standard. Like you have to look like a certain level to be that certain level yeah. pretty. And then, you know, that people actually following you, you get like better conversion rate, stuff like that. So that's
it's a different for me.
That's a strategy I have to use.
First of all, that's a really good insight. Thank you for sharing that with us. And we've kind of noticed this before as well that, and actually I think we've talked this about briefly in the previous episodes, that every brand, when they go into China, not every brand, most brands when they go into China, Western brands, they feel like they need to talk about their brand heritage, their brand story. They want you to use the same marketing strategy of focusing on building the brand in China, but that doesn't work. Like people start to realize that doesn't work. It works for some brands, very rarely, but in general, it's like a strategy that doesn't seem to work very well.
I think that kind of situation is slowly changing.
Yeah,
but
I was about to say that.
But it is slowly.
Exactly. And the second point you were talking about was kind of the ideology point about how people view kind of diversity, especially in consumerism. I think the standard is still very traditional, kind of very perfect, picture perfect, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And there's less kind of like real-life diversity in the way that people see brands and products from those brands. And this kind of leads nicely onto the next point, actually, about Chinese overseas and how long they stay in the country that they study in or they work in before they go back to China. And what we've found is that actually a lot more, there's obviously a lot more Chinese people that are coming out of China, living overseas or studying overseas, but there's also seems to be more people that are going back to China after they've done their studies. Maybe you could just tell our audience why you decided to stay in New York or in America rather than going back to China.
Yeah, yeah. I actually have that like struggle 2 years ago, went through a very dark period of my life. It's just like, I think it's around 2 years ago, like the social media kind of blogger industry, like, you know, started to go back in China. Yeah. And a lot of my friends, you know, blogger friends, they actually went back to China. Mm-hmm. They probably would make way more than I do right now.
It's not about the money though, right?
Yeah. And I was thinking about it and I didn't go back because I feel like, you know, I live in New York. I'm actually in the most advanced
one place. Of the most modern cities in the world.
Yeah, and
except for Shanghai.
It's just like, I feel like it is, you get more exposure about the creativity. I mean, that's the place that people have all this freedom to create anything, and that's the place anything can happen. And I'm a very curious person. I really like to learn. Like you said, it's not always about the money. I think whatever we are doing in New York right now, say like we're doing this like female, you know, entrepreneur trend, and then we're doing, you know, with all this like new technology thing mixed up with all the other industry, and say like panels, pop-ups, all this like new ideas that we're doing in New York now, it's probably gonna, you know, be trending like half a year later in China. So I just feel like I'm in the most advanced industry city, and they're doing all this kind of new things and learning new ideas, how to mix and match. And that's what
that's
drives me excited.
Yeah, you feel like you feel like you're in a place that is at the peak of the creative industry.
Yeah.
Kind of whether it's about the events or the strategy or what you're experiencing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I guess for me, I definitely agree with that. That the creative industry, I think, especially in the West, is a lot more advanced than it is in China. But certain aspects, I think, we were talking about this earlier, and we talk about this a lot in the office, that we feel like almost service design, innovation, and the way technology integrates into people's lives, that Shanghai places like Shanghai, so in China, not only catching up, but sometimes ahead of of the West, of New York, of London specifically. And that the gap, and I think your point is perfect. The gap is not about standard of living. It's not about technology integration in people's lives, about innovation. It's about cultural dispositions, about people's kind of mindset. So yeah. You mentioned earlier about diversity, about kind of like sustainable. We haven't talked about sustainability.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's cultural disposition that needs to catch up with the modernity. And another point is that I don't know if you face this, I would love to hear from you, but when people go back, a lot of people go back, they get a lot of traditional family pressures of kind of starting a family, of having a kid like early on rather than kind of like being individualistic and focusing your own goals and your own dreams, sure. rather than kind of like following this traditional value.
Yeah.
Do you think there's a difference? I mean, kind of like with the pressures of just like personal life, yeah. by living in China or living in the West?
I don't know. My family is kind of different, but I guess like when you go back to China, you kind of like, I mean, every time I go back to China, I just feel like a little restrained, even like just, you know, by having this hair, this crazy hair, just walking on the street, people just giving you some looks, you know, just like, that's the girl's different. so I just feel restrained. I don't feel as free as I was in New York. And also in New York, you really literally can do anything and nobody cares because nobody cares. People don't really give a shit. They're just really busy with their own life. So, which I think is great because you are busy with your own life too. And then you don't have time to judge other people. So that gives the freedom. Yeah. So no judgment, like, from anybody. And you can just do your own thing. So, like, people definitely wouldn't judge your age or, like, what you're doing.
What stage of your life
you're in. What stage of your life, yeah. Or your personal lifestyle if you're a playboy. So it's just, like, very low judgment standard bars. Yeah. And people kind of just live the most of their life and do exactly what they want.
I think that's, again, another very good point for brands is that maybe, I don't know if you agree, when they're talking to when they're talking to an audience that are Chinese based overseas, maybe they can be a bit more open and a bit more experimental with their campaign messaging than they can be with Chinese people based in China.
Yeah.
Sometimes you are kind of like forced to be quite, I guess, traditional in your messaging or kind of family orientated, whereas in the West, Chinese, it sounds like, is that right? That Chinese people are a lot more open to different types of campaigns.
Yeah, I think so. But like, also, I do think that we cannot say China is like, you know, a little behind anymore. I just think it's different because like Shanghai is definitely like, oh,
I agree,
my God, it's like really, really modern. And like you said, they probably like with technology wise or something, like they're so much better than the Western world. Say like you can use WeChat and just pay everything now, right? So like all this crazy thing like that happened like in China, in Beijing, all this big city, then they just have different standards and you really have to learn.
Yeah.
Like now even I have to learn what's the real Chinese culture now with the millennials. What do they care about? Say, they do not really care about the brand stories, but like, what do they care about? You can't say it's like behind or anything. It's just very, very different.
It's just different. I agree.
Very,
it's just
very
different. There's a massive cultural tension here between, on one side, that quality of life and technology enablement is, I think, far better than the West. On the other side, cultural disposition, traditional values is still lagging behind, which influence consumerism. There's a big cultural tension here.
Yeah.
Do you think when brands figure out, if brands kind of like figure out these cultural tensions and build creative and campaigns that latch onto these, and we've seen examples of some of them like SK2 with the kind of leftover woman, I think it's a great campaign. Do you think when brands figure these things out and they figure out what the true cultural tensions are, and when they build campaigns, then you have something that's lasting, something you stand for,
rather
than being kind of like false and superficial.
Yes, because like when you build a brand that, you know, it's like far beyond the product, that's what people are actually spending their money for. It's not because, of course, like you have to have great product, but that's
It's a given.
That's no, that's easier to achieve. Say like you like 100 brands, they probably have like similar quality products.
I just want to kind of summarize, I guess, for our audience that a few things we discussed. I think the first point is that a lot of brands forget that there's a huge amount of Chinese people overseas. There's literally hundreds of thousands in the UK, the US, and they can be used as not only consumer research, people who are living in the country that you can call into your office and ask them questions, test products and services, but also they're a huge voice for Chinese people that are based in China. More so these days than it was 6-7 years ago. There are more Chinese people coming outside of China, yeah. And there's more Chinese people going back to China. And when they go back, they bring the experiences they've had and the ideas and the kind of cultural values they have. Mm-hmm. So that's a point that a lot of brands have missed. The second point, we talked a lot about content and platforms and how to reach these Chinese consumers overseas.
Very different strategies.
Yeah. So the content side, I think we discussed that just because it's English doesn't mean you can't respect and integrate your message into Chinese culture and Chinese festivals. And the example we talked about was Singles Day. And platform-wise, people tend to forget that just because these platforms are banned in China doesn't mean people don't use them when they're outside of China. So obviously yourself, you've built a huge following of Chinese overseas on Instagram. That's a great way to reach Chinese people outside of China.
Yeah. And also, I like to like write in Chinese on Instagram. And I realized actually that, you know, that brings more Chinese followers. And then, because every time I post an article or something on my Instagram in Chinese, and I realize like the views actually just woof,
really
goes up like so much, and then like all this like Chinese people who lives abroad and stuff,
they leave comments in Chinese as well, right? Like the air of authenticity, maybe. Yeah. Something that they feel like they crave when they're outside of China.
Yeah, and I think you should use that as a Chinese influencer live abroad. You should definitely use that. That's like one of your
USPs almost.
Point. Yeah, like your selling point or something. Like and you should use that. That's a great idea. Yeah.
I think a lot of Chinese influencers still focus on Chinese platforms when they're abroad.
Yeah.
And not enough do Western platforms.
Yeah, because like you also want, you know, the rest of the world to realize, hey, you are a Chinese blogger who lives in the US, or, you know, it's cool. Like all the brands and all the other people, they start to, you know, make more, pay more attention to Chinese market. Because, like, I'm still sort of, like, wherever I go in New York, and I always, you know, the only Chinese blogger there. And I like to say that. I'm like, yeah, I'm Chinese blogger. I'm Chinese. I'm from China. And they're always like, wow, this is cool. And they start to ask you questions, like, what's going on, blah, blah, blah. Can you help me with my Chinese market? And I'm, like, more than happy to, because I want to address that more and more. So, you know, bring up the Chinese blogger.
It's integrating your kind of unique, unique selling point into Western
and also,
platforms.
That's what my influence. Culture. That's what my influence are. Not just, you know, to my audience, but also I want to influence the U.S. market. Like I want the brands to know that, hey, Chinese blogger is in presence. Like Chinese blogger in the house, and like I want them to know that, and I want them to like pay more attention, which I did, and that's amazing. Be more, you know, own it, and then like
leverage your individuality,
and make them to learn more about you.
I think that's a great tip for anyone listening as well, is that try and find Chinese influencers that do have a presence on Western platforms that are using kind of like their Chinese authenticity. But rather than just focusing on Chinese platforms, use Western platforms. And there are people that do very well on that side. The final point is creativity. And we talk a lot about creativity at Qumin. We love it. We think it's the best way to resonate with the audience you're trying to talk to. Mm-hmm. And we talked earlier about how a lot of Chinese audience stuck between kind of like a modern lifestyle, with technology, with convenience that are far beyond what the Western audience is used to, and also the traditional values that they still latch on to. And there's a huge cultural tension here, and brands that find solutions or kind mm-hmm. of almost like opportunities to leverage this cultural tension tend to do really well in China. We gave the example of SK2. Mm-hmm. And I think that's pretty much a wrap for this episode. So first, I want to say thank you very much for coming down. Really, really great insights. And we'd love to have you back sometimes. And I'm sure we could talk.
Tomorrow.
Even more. Maybe tomorrow. Thank you, guys. See you on the next episode.
Thank you.